Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomoni Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Long Knives Are Crying, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III. Chapter 34, Dreams. Cloud was puzzled. For 4 days now, the Long Knives had stayed on Goose Creek. He had expected them to be moving by now, but the scouts he had sent south had returned, reporting no sign of travel along the Powder River Road. During daylight, every other possible route leading to Goose Creek from any direction was being closely watched. No other whites had been seen. Assuming that the Long Knives were regrouping and preparing to move north against the Lakota and Cheyenne, Cloud decided to harass them at every opportunity to keep them off balance. Tall Bull and several of the Cheyenne dog soldiers followed 3 hunters working for the Long Knives. Along the upper reaches of Goose Creek, far up the thick pine forests of the foothills, they drove off the hunters' horses and wounded one of the men with an arrow. To the surprise of Tall Bull and his companions, the other 2 hunters carried their wounded man back to the camp. Late in the afternoon, White Wing arrived with 8 men and a message for Cloud. Crazy Horse wanted news and Cloud's assessment of the situation. Before leaving, Cloud encouraged Wolf Eyes and the men staying behind not to let the Long Knives rest. Yellow Wolf, Tall Bull, and several others accompanied Cloud north. At twilight, they crossed the Tongue and made camp. Just before sundown on the next day, they were home. Cloud turned his horse loose in the herd and walked toward the southwest part of the village. It was a good feeling to see familiar lodges and know that he was back home, at least for a while. His footsteps quickened as he caught sight of his own lodge. Song was playing in front of the lodge with her collection of bone horses and glanced up as a long shadow crossed over the ground. With a squeal, she was on her feet and jumped into her father's arms. "Father!" He held her tightly, amazed at the strength in her arms as she squeezed his neck. "It is good to see you," he breathed into her neck. She nodded and did not let go. In a moment, he lowered her to the ground. "How are you?" he asked, stroking her braids and touching her smiling face. "Good. Are you hungry?" Sweetwater Woman looked out the door and a hand went to her mouth as she emerged. "I thought I heard voices," she said. Stepping toward her, Cloud embraced his wife, holding her for many long moments, silently reveling in the fresh scent of her hair and the feel of her body against his. He had been gone for so long. 9 days, Sweetwater Woman said, as if reading his mind. "We have not seen you for 9 days. "Too long, too long," he replied, finally letting go. "It is good to have you home," she told him. "Crazy Horse stopped by 2 days ago and told us he was sending for you, so we have been preparing food." "We have a new colt, too," Song announced. "She came 3 days ago." "Then we had better get acquainted with her," he replied. "Me and Grandpa did already. We can go see her after we eat." The fatigue in his body and the shadows in his spirit faded as he allowed himself to be led into the lodge. As far as he was concerned, the touch of a woman, young or old, was the best medicine for the troubled soul of a warrior. Earlier in the afternoon, he and other men had stopped to bathe in a small, busy little stream that flowed into Ash Creek. It was a small ritual the warriors tried to observe as much as possible, if circumstances allowed. The ceremony was to cleanse more than the body. Washing off the dirt and grime also symbolically washed off the difficult and even ugly things they had seen and done. After the bath, they smudged with sage. In spite of being anxious to get home, they finished the trip at a leisurely pace. "Everyone is still talking about the battle where the woman saved her brother," Sweetwater Woman said, as she handed him a slice of roasted elk skewered on a willow rod. "Was it as difficult as some are saying it was?" He stared at the black hair of the buffalo robe on the floor before he answered. "It was a long fight," he told her, "the longest I have ever been in. I hardly slept the night before." "And where are the Long Knives now?" Cloud glanced at Song, who was rearranging her bone horses on the robe next to her father. "Goose Creek," he said. "Will they stay there?" "I think so. There is something strange about them. They are not going anywhere." He cut off a piece of meat and ate, chewing slowly. "How is my cousin?" Sweetwater Woman poured tea and handed him the cup. "Frustrated," she replied, "like you were 10 years ago when you were wounded. He has to move slowly. Moving slowly is better than not moving at all, he said. Cloud was physically tired. She could tell by his hand gestures, by the way his shoulders slumped, but she was more worried about the distant stare in his eyes, as if he were seeing something that was not part of the moment or the setting, but something that was part of him somewhere. A soft scratch at the door caught their attention. Come in, she said, cautiously on the verge of irritation. A young face looked in and glanced immediately toward Cloud. Sweetwater woman recognized the young man, but could not recall his name. Uncle, he said respectfully, the old man and the war leaders will get together in the morning. City will ask that you be there as well. Yes, I will be there. Sweetwater woman awoke in the middle of the night to see Cloud sitting up, staring ahead. She whispered softly so as not to alarm him. Are you well? Yes, he said quietly. I think I was too comfortable. There is tea left in the kettle. No. She sat up and moved closer, laying her head on his shoulder. I want to know something, she said. What? Sitting Bull's vision. Did it happen? He shook his head. I do not think so. Cloud was up at first light and walked toward one of the horse herds, curious about the grass. The herds were farther from the village. Much of the grass had been grazed down. On the way back, he happened to notice the young man, Little Feather, or Bug, sitting forlornly in front of his domed shelter. Not many of the single men living on the edges of the village were awake at this time. How are things with you? Cloud asked, stopping. Little Feather seemed surprised that Cloud was speaking to him. Good, he said, except for the mosquitoes. One of the bad things about summer, Cloud observed. He pointed to the rifle lying in the open. I see you got your rifle back. Yes, Uncle Grable gave it back to me. Bullets, too. Good, good. But that was after all of you left for Rosewood Creek. I want it to go. Cloud nodded. He thought of Sweetwater Woman's question during the night. Keep it close, he said. The long knives are sneaky. Little Feather watched the warrior walking away. There was something about the man that gave him a cold feeling in his stomach. Little Feather knew Cloud was downright dangerous, even without a rifle in his hands. After a moment, he glanced down at his rifle. Cloud walked slowly along the curve of the outer row of lodges. Sweetwater Woman had told him last night that more people continued to arrive every day since he had left to scout to the south. He noticed there were more temporary shelters at the edges of the village. Although it was early, many people were awake and going about their tasks. Already there were groups of old men sitting together. Over it all, there still hung a sense of power Cloud had never felt before. 20 men or more were already in the Council Lodge, including Gall, Black Moon, Good Road, Good Weasel, Bull Bear, and Two Moons of the Cheyenne, among others. Red Butte of the Dakota and other old leaders sat with Sitting Bull on the north side of the room. With them were High Eagle and Worm. The talk as Cloud walked in and took a seat was about moving the village. Those who are grieving, Sitting Bull said, referring to the families of the warriors killed at the Rosebud, or those who had died of wounds later, have had 4 days since they received the news. So I think it is time to move. The grass in the Valley of the Greasy Grass is very good. We can send the camp criers out before the sun is high. By sundown, the village can be in place. My friends and I, he said, pointing to the two other medicine men, have decided that the cottonwood grove west of the river is the place. Heads nodded in agreement. Good, Sitting Bull said. Now what about the long knives to the south, he asked. Crazy Horse leaned forward. Uncle, before we talk about that, some of the scouts who have been up near the Elk River think they have seen long knives up there. What did they see? Sitting Bull wanted to know. Good Road cleared his throat. White men not dressed as long knives, two or three. Our scouts watched them until dark, and they seemed to be scouting out a trail north of the river going east. That was 3 days ago. Sitting Bull turned a questioning glance toward Crazy Horse and Gall. We will keep our scouts in that area, Crazy Horse said. If there are long knives to the north, Gall said, I think it is a smaller column. The column we defeated at Rosewood was over 1,000. We cannot forget about them. Heads turned toward Cloud, who took a deep breath. 2 days ago, they were still at Goose Creek. Two of our men went south but saw no other whites or long knives. I think they are waiting for other long knives to join them. About 40 of our men are down there. We will hear if they move in any direction. My friend, Red Butte said, leaning forward and glancing toward Sitting Bull for a moment. The Dakota headman was the only one in the lodge who wore a cloth shirt and wool trousers, but his moccasins were made of elk hide and his long thin braids were wrapped in otter fur. Something has been on my mind since we received word of our victory several days ago. What you saw in your vision, I think, did not happen there. What do you think? What can you tell us? The sudden deep silence indicated that Red Butte had spoken what was on all their minds. The Hunkpapa medicine man sat thoughtfully for a moment before he looked up and glanced over the circle of faces. As a man with a family, I do not want the Long Knives to attack. As a medicine man with a gift that I did not ask for, the gift that helped me to see something I did not like, I have to say that what I saw has not yet come to pass. We must be ready at all times. Gall made contact with Crazy Horse, who nodded slowly. Word had been circulated for days that a move to the Greasy Grass Valley would happen, so the women had been preparing, packing, and tying bundles to be loaded onto drag poles. Not long after the camp criers rode through the village announcing the move, the first lodge covers were pulled off and folded. The village came alive with an almost festive air. Movement was in the blood of the Lakota and Cheyenne. Therefore, moving the village even a short distance was reason for excitement. Shouts of children filled the air and women laughed as they worked. Cloud and Song went to the herd and brought back their drag horses, four big geldings with quiet, patient dispositions, along with the horses they would ride and those that Star Woman and Bear Face needed as well. The horse herds began moving first. As the horse guards and young men began driving them west, most people paused to watch them go. They moved in a stream of colors over the land. The flow of manes and tails and the drumming of hooves stirred the soul, reminding everyone that their spirits were bonded to these relatives that carried them and shared their journey through life. Here and there, a warrior lifted a war cry and women trilled to acknowledge and celebrate the very image of freedom and strength. The Lakota were the buffalo nation, but they were also the people of the horse. The landscape was now covered with thousands of people and nearly 2,000 horses pulling drag poles. Singing a moving the camp song, High Eagle led the way, with Worm and Sitting Bull beside him. Behind them were several very old men. One of them, Elk of the Four Winds, carried the glowing embers from the council lodge in a turtle shell. At the new encampment, he would start a fire with them. This was an old custom symbolizing the strength and spirit of the people who would never die, no matter where they pitched their lodges. When the flames of the new fire burned strong along the greasy grass, they would ask for blessings on the new site. Cloud decided not to join the procession of warriors riding guard on either side of the long column. He rode with Sweetwater Woman and Song instead. "Where are we going?" Song asked, squinting in the bright sun. "To the valley where Ash Creek empties into the Greasy Grass River," he told her. "Is it a good place?" "There is plenty of grass, and our lodges will be close to the river, in the shade of a very large cottonwood trees. It has always been one of my favorite places." "Are there good places to play?" "Many," he replied, smiling. For the first time in days, he felt good. South of Ash Creek, the column found a crossing upstream from where the creek flowed into the Greasy Grass River. The spring snowmelt from the mountains made the stream deeper than usual, but a few young men had already found a fairly shallow crossing and piled stones on each bank to mark it. The playful atmosphere did not subside. At the river bank, many women and girls removed their moccasins and leggings and held their dresses up to their knees as they waded across or helped balance loads on the drag frames being pulled by the current. Turning right beyond the west bank of the river, the horses and men, women and children on horseback and on foot, moved across a broad green floodplain. Breezes whispered through the tall grass and shook the leaves of the giant cottonwoods west of the river, giving them a soft, beckoning voice. As the last of the columns gained the west bank, Worm and High Eagle led the front of it into the wide grove of tall trees. West of the grove, thousands of horses were already grazing, their heads down in the thick grass and their tails flicking at bothersome flies. The lush bottom land along the river seemed like a different world compared to the uneven prairies and sparse grass along Ash Creek. Here, there was a sense of peacefulness that the previous village site did not have. Two men sat on the sandstone bluffs north of the now empty village site. Only a lone burial lodge and the poles of the Sundance Arbor were signs that people had lived here for a month. The last of the departing line of humanity had long since disappeared over the rise. The men's horses grazed below them on a slope. Stands and Timber looked over at Crazy Horse. I have never seen so many people in one place, he observed. More have come in the past 10 days, many of them young men. Yes, and there are more horses than people, Crazy Horse replied. I think they will graze the greasy grass valley down in less than a month. A shrill of a hawk in the high cloudless sky drew his gaze upward. Shading his eyes, he found the form, soaring effortlessly, riding the breezes on outstretched wings. I had a dream, Stans and Timber said. I was driving a wagon pulled by horses the way the white men do. There were women and children with me in the wagon. That bothers me. I have never been in a wagon. That is the funny thing about dreams, Crazy Horse replied. They come when you least expect and do not when you seek them, and they bring messages you do not want. I cannot see the time when I would ever ride in a wagon, Stans and Timber said. Why it comes in a dream, I do not know. I can tell you this. The reason or the answer will come in time. It will come to pass. That is the terrible thing about dreams. Stans and Timber nodded silently. Driving a white man's wagon is not a bad thing as it stands. What the dream means is what I'm afraid of. I, too, have been having a dream recently, Crazy Horse admitted, about a snake.
A snake?
Yes, like your wagon, the snake in my dream has a meaning, and I think it is a warning about enemies, Crazy Horse speculated. You mean like the Long Knives or the Crow? Those kind of enemies? Crazy Horse shook his head thoughtfully. No, other kinds, the kind that hide behind smiling faces, the kind that hold their true feelings back. You have those kinds of enemies, Stans and Timber said angrily. The good thing is most of them are at the agencies near Robinson, not here. What was your dream? A snake follows me in the grass, and then in the air. When I turn, it flees, but it comes back again.
In the air? Stans and Timber asked.
A snake that can fly. Perhaps it means that your enemies will do something unexpected.
Crazy Horse looked back and stood.
I think I will draw it in my dream on this rock. He pointed at the low sandstone wall behind them. Choosing a bare spot the size of a man's chest, he traced over it with his finger, then pulled out his knife. With the tip, he began to scratch at the surface of the soft stone. The young Cheyenne watched as his friend concentrated on his task. First, the outline of a horse appeared on the rock face, seeming to move to the left. Stepping back for a moment, Crazy Horse then scratched out the outline of a long snake. Behind and slightly above the horse, bent forward at the middle, with the well-defined head and eyes. Then he added stripes across the middle of its body. Stans and Timber did not tell his friend that a shiver went up his back as he gazed at the sketch. I hope that the spirits look at this and know that I bear no ill will towards anyone except the whites, Crazy Horse declared. The young Cheyenne stepped forward. In that drawing, he said, pointing, that snake will never catch that horse. Crazy Horse put away his knife and pulled out a sprig of sage from the pouch hanging from his belt and laid it gently on the narrow ledge. My friend, he said quietly, it is time to go. They crossed over the north fork of the creek and put their horses into a lope. By the time they reached the bluffs north of the confluence, it was the middle of the afternoon. All along the crest of the hills to the north, warriors, mounted, sitting in the grass, or standing next to their horses, were looking intently into the trees below them and across the river. Through the trees, many of the hundreds of lodges that had already been erected could be seen. On the other side of the cottonwood trees, horses, thousands of horses, dotted the flat land. Turning north, Crazy Horse and Stans and Timber rode the crests until they were even with what they thought was the middle of the new encampment. A man standing by himself on a gentle slope, holding the long rein to the horse behind him, caught their eye. It was Gaul. The Hunkpapa war leader nodded as they arrived. He seemed glad for the company and pointed toward the village. I never get tired of watching how quickly the women can put up the lodges, he said. Crazy Horse grinned. As long as we stay out of their way, he said. Because of the trees, the village could not be arranged in one large circle as it had been along Ash Creek. Instead, the medicine men had let each group pick out their own sites and form smaller circles. Your people are on the northern end, past the Medicine Tail Crossing, Gaul said to Stans and Timber. He turned to Crazy Horse. South of them are your people, and then the Sichangu, along with the Ohenupa. Below them, the Ihonktua and the Isanti. Next, the Sihasapa, and then the Mnikanju and the Ijajib Chola. My people, the Hunkpapa, are at the end, as we always are,
in that open area between the Sichonglu and the Sihasapa, close to the river. The council lodge and the warrior society lodges will be put up. That is a long village, Stanton Timber pointed out. Someone should walk from one end to the other to see how many paces that would be. I would guess at least 4,000, Gall ventured. It would take a very good horse to gallop that far before it had to reach for its second wind. Look, Stanton Timber called out. He pointed at the giant cottonwoods as the breezes suddenly grew stronger, loosening the tiny white puffs of silvery cotton that carried the seeds. Before long, the air was filled with them, looking like a sudden snow squall. Life goes on, Gall said loudly. Life goes on. And that concludes chapter 34.
This program is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to Ohomani Iotaka on KDKO 89.5 FM.